No, thanks, no. Oh, and I'm Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And sorry about that. I'm so conditioned to putting out being at 8 o'clock that I just, in fact, my buddy Raymond is still walking around the block out there. Hopefully he'll come in. What can I tell you? Well, I usually start with two little stories. And the first one is, they're not stories, they're a little kind of sayings or something. The first one is that, and I heard this in AA, and most of what I'll tell you, I heard in AA. This is a guy from the States, and he said, I spent the first 15 years of my life acquiring defects of character. I spent the next 25 years in the throes of alcoholism and addiction, honing these defects of character to perfection. And I spent the last couple of years in Alcoholics Anonymous trying to get rid of them. And the other one is, what's the difference between an earth person and an alcoholic? And nobody had the answer. Well, the guy said, the answer is this, that the earth person will build castles in the sky. The alcoholic will build castles in the sky and he'll move in. So they summed me up to a T, you know. What's he got, 40, half an hour, whatever? It's kind of hard to sum it all up. I'm 67 years old as of the 9th of June, and I have a buddy there who's the same birth date. He's almost as long as I am. I'm 26 years on the 2nd of August. And between the four of us, we're both Gemini, so between the four of us, we kind of control both things. I was born in this mine 67 years ago. I'm Catholic, you know, and that's a prerequisite for part, at least for some of us, to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Large family in those days, six kids, mother and father. Father was one of the most constant people I've ever met in my life. You know, he was a printer, he was at five. And he was as regular as the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun all his whole lifetime. He liked to have a drink every now and then, but not alcoholic. I didn't realize until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that until I heard Jerry O'Neill speaking, Jerry O'Neill the teacher, who had grown up in Ireland, that he said there were more people who didn't belong to him living in his house than and that was exactly like that. There was always somebody. An uncle or somebody, you know, who really was related to us, maybe somewhat, so it was cause for dysfunction, even that itself, you know. But from there, I'm fifth out of six kids. I had an older brother. Brother John was number four. I'm five, and he was 3 years older. My sister Marion was 3 years younger. So I was kind of the lost child there, and I didn't really know that, and I felt it a lot, but I didn't, I thought something wrong with me, you know? And it was only after many years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I went home for a wedding, and my aunt, who used to kind of take me for the weekend sometimes, and I voiced this, and she said, well, you know, you know? So here, after all these years, this feeling was obvious, you know? There was sexual abuse before I was seven, I think, or around seven, and I didn't think that had anything to do with anything until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous also, you know. So in those early years, just fear was starting to be ingrained in me, the no self-worth, like, you know, because of this whole being the lost kid. At the time I'm 14, the glorious days of puberty are setting in, and the Irish Christian Brothers, I don't know if anybody even know them, but they were coming to my town to open a high school, a regional high school, and we had to go, because the school that everybody had gone through now was just going to be a girls' school for high school, you know? So, fear, you want to see fear, man, I want to run. I want to run away, you know? But Newfoundland's an island, and you can't go very far. So I went anyway, and it was the only time I saw my father really kind of reach out to me and just that he was concerned that, you know, like he talked about, you know, at least getting high school and that was very important and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I went, And it turned out to be three of the best years of my life. You know, the brothers realized, they spotted I had a talent for playing piano. And by the second year of high school, I was accompanying the glee club. And, you know, it just went on from there. And through there, we started a little group. I don't know if anybody's been to Corner Brook. Raymond has for sure. But it's a paper mill town, and it's a seaport town, you know, and there's a bar on every corner. And so by 17 years old, I'm in the bar playing two or three, four nights a week, and I'm not even supposed to be inside the door, you know. So, and I'm drinking at that point like that, you know. My first drink was probably 14 or 15. Everybody in Newfoundland made homebrew out of anything or something. Whether it was dogberry wine, that's like choke cherries, and blueberries, and dandelion wine, you name it, everybody drank. By the time I'm 17, 18, 19, I'm working, I have full-time job at the paper mill on the shipping, on the wharf, and I'm in the shipping business. We could buy, I'm talking 40 years ago, we could buy a bottle of Black & Scotch for $2 off the boat, and a bottle of, it's called Three Bells Rum for $1. There was no shortage of money, there was no shortage of booze. By the time I'm 19, 20 there, you know, and I'm still playing two or three nights a week. And you're young at that point, and you can regroup, you know, and two or three hours sleep and a couple of cups of coffee, and you're ready for work, you know. And I really don't know how much time what kind of a day I put in, but it was one of the things that in my fourth step, the first fourth step was you know, all the industrial time that I would be able to pay back, you know, that for not being there or not putting in a good day. 19 or 20, you know, this whatever is here, you know, is nobody knew what to call it in those days, I suppose, but there's been so many studies of addiction and all that kind of stuff now since Alcoholics Anonymous that it's called a hole in the soul. And that's what I had, a hole in my soul. There was just this want, you know, and I just couldn't come to terms with anything, you know. My life's going nowhere, and I'm drunk, not drunk, but at least drinking, you know, pretty much all the time. And what happened is I just had this, my brother at that point, 3 years older, in the Navy. And he had gotten married, and he had a house and a wife and a couple of kids at that point. And, you know, I just said, well, like, and he was my idol, I guess, you know. So I said, you know, to myself, if I stay here in Newfoundland, nothing like that's going to happen, you know. So I went, not like most of the miners go to Toronto. Now they're going to Calgary and Alberta, but we went to Vancouver. I had a lot of cousins out there. So what I did, that was my first geographical cure. I went 5,000 miles. I drank all the way. We went on the train, and I drank on to Vancouver on the train. And I arrived with a hangover like you would not believe, man. Got a job. Everything was okay, but I'm drinking. And I didn't know about a geographical cure. I didn't know that I took all my troubles with me. And that wherever I went, they were going to be with me. Like I said, a good job, you know, I was pretty smart guy, actually, and I had done two or three years, and three or four, actually, and one of them was 3M, you know, and Minnesota Mining, and I just chose not to go because of fear, you know, and I don't know where I would have ended up, but... Anyway, so there was the music, and there was my cousins belonged to a choir, so I just joined, you know. And so we had met a lot of people like that, and we met a girl, and things were just going great, you know. But that hole in the soul is here, you know, and nothing has healed, and so they offered me. The girl was talking, you know, she was talking engagement and all that kind of stuff. But I was just like in a frozen state, you know. It's hard to explain unless you've been there. But what happened is they offered me a transfer to Toronto. I said, yeah, you know, gotta get out of here. And of course I went to Toronto and the same thing, you know. I took me with me and nothing had been resolved. After a year in Toronto, they needed somebody in Vancouver again. And I was single. I was pretty smart. Good worker, you know, when I, yeah, I was pretty good at this because I did come to work every day. And, but they're drinking all the time, you know. Went back to Vancouver and stayed there about a year, maybe a year and a bit. And I just didn't want to stay there anymore, you know. So I said to my rationale was I always wanted to come to Montreal anyway, you know. So I went home for Christmas in Newfoundland, and I came back here in the winter of, I don't know what year it was, 74, I guess. And but what happened was, again, I got a good job. I got a really good job. I was credit manager at the Montreal General Hospital. But if you're a real alcoholic like I am, through all of this, there's dishonesty, there's theft, there is, I'm a bookkeeper, I'm a good bookkeeper, too good, so maybe. And I used to go to La Claire and you see and all the high median. And one old guy was there, he was called Machine Gun Al. He had been robbed so many banks, he spent half his life in jail. And he said, the more I hear of you guys, I'm convinced some of you should be in here, you know, with us, right, you know. But through all of this, you know, there's padding of expense accounts and there's you borrow and you want to pay it back on payday, and payday comes and you can't do it, and it's just a mess. So with all of this crap that has been building in my heart and my soul, my conscience for all those years, it now has this big guilt trip attached to it, you know. So you know you're ready. I mean, and I knew about AA. There was my uncle in Newfoundland had been one of the founding members in Corner Brook. He passed away now. It's a long time ago that you know that, and I knew that you went there to stop drinking. That's about it. In fact, one of the times in Toronto, I looked up the number and I just never called it. You know, and we don't know how to be good, how to be really good to ourselves, right? You know. So what happened then, I'm in Montreal, and it's the same thing here, you know, and there's all this dishonesty and padding of expense accounts, and then driving Peter, you know, because now the bills are, you know, at one point I had two visas, and I had an account at Simpsons, and I had an account at probably Eaton's, and God knows what else, you know. Before this, I had household finance, and I was living on Clark, which is downtown by St. Lawrence, St. Lawrence Boulevard. And my cousin had come from St. John, was living on Clark Avenue over here. He worked at an airline. So I'm trying to convince the guy, the manager of household finance, that the bank loan that you see there, that's my cousin, and you know, he looked at me just shaking his head, you know, because you come to the point where you can't lie anymore, eh? You're not convincing at all, you know. Anyway, at this point, my health started to deteriorate. Not my heart, my heart's still good, actually. I don't know how, but it is. My health started to deteriorate, and I'm working in a hospital, and this is after 3 or 4 years, and the doctor tells me, and the staff doctor tells me that he didn't, I don't think he gave me a diagnosis. Maybe he did, but I didn't hear it. He said, and he was a little short guy, a little cocky little guy, you know, you gotta stop drinking for the rest of your life, you know, like right in my face with that, you know. And in my head, you know, it's going around, you know, well, I'll drink apple cider. I'll find some way around this, you know. So what happened is I go to a specialist, private doctor in the hospital. He said, well, I think you could drink a little bit, you know, and that's all I needed to hear. So I kept on going. But like, again, I'm telling you, through all this, there's all this dishonesty, there's all this misery, really, that's building, you know. And the hole in the soul is now festering, you know. It's just a big, big sore, you know. They talk about, you know, remember Nick from Sunday Nighters? He said he kept going down to the Maine to see the show until he became part of it. You know, And that's true, you know. I would be down to Peter's. I don't know if anybody, any of you know where Peter's. It's in the strip between St. Lawrence and Dorchester, in Quebec. And I'd be at Peter's at 1 o'clock in the morning, looking at my watch and figuring if I left now, how many hours I would have to sleep before I went. I had to go to get up and go to work. You know, it was just misery plus, really and truly. You know. Anyway. I don't know what happened, but towards the end of the 70s there, my sobriety date is in August 81, so it was the end of 80, I guess. Around the end of 80, anyway, I came home from work one day, and I just had this, I opened the fridge, have a beer, and there was only one beer there, you know? And I wouldn't open it, and I because I said, this is, one is not enough, and I had this big realization, you know? So at that point, I'm debating a problem with alcohol, you know, not alcoholism, a problem with alcohol. So I called for, you know, 12 more or whatever, and then I had one, you know. And another time, maybe in the same spot, you know, on the fridge, I had this kind of a drowning man's experience where all of the crap that I had going on in my life and all this shit that I'm bringing around with me day after day after day, a bag of rocks, basically, that's what it was. Alcohol was the other side of the equation, you know? Interesting. So, towards the end, like I said, towards the end of the 80s, I went home to Newfoundland for Christmas. My mother was really, really ill. And I used to go home, you know, once a year at least. And anyway, this time she was very, very ill. I didn't drink very much because she had told me previously, I think you're an alcoholic, you know? And I don't know. I don't know. At that point, you know, but I had an uncle, a great uncle, my mother's uncle, looked exactly like him. He shot himself by, and that frightened the crap out of me, you know. I said, that could be me, you know. Anyway, Christmas was very good, you know, and I didn't drink very much, actually. In January the 14th, my mother died, and that was 2 weeks later, so we went back. And this time I had this first reason to drink, you know, just cause to drink. And I went back with a load of Bacardi, and not that I was going to drink at all, but I just didn't want to run out. And it went on like that, you know. We had the Irish wake, I'm the piano player, you know, and so I had to be part of it. And it went on for a couple of days, you know. But anyway, the day I arrived back, I was pretty sick. The Gazette, I used to look at the Gazette all the time. An article on Alcoholics Anonymous with 20 questions. And my brother and my sister swear that my mother went somewhere and had that published just for me. And later there was probably another bunch of sons and daughters, you know, that mothers and fathers were praying for. I answered 17 to the yeses, but it didn't get in very, very far, because they say the longest, 18 inches is from here to here, or however long it is. And maybe I'm not, not on me, is it like, it's not 18 inches there. But it took a bit of time, and I don't remember much of the spring of 1981, but by the time, I think it was May, the end of April or May, I rolled around, I just had it, you know. And I was in the bus one day, and there was a sign saying, you don't have to drink today. And there was no, it was just a phone number. And I knew it was a, you know, I called. And I don't know who it was answered my call. It was May of 1981. And the only one I know who got sober in January was Cecil, the elder Cecil. And it wasn't him. He said he wasn't doing the phones at that point, you know. But anyway, that's what I needed to hear, 3 months sober. So they set me up with Paul Saussier, who is the same, he's still over today, a long, long time. And he took me to Tuesday 7 o'clock, which is where Podium was after. And there was a lady named Jeannie, gave me my first AA hug. And the way she was talking, like, I thought she was there 3 months, you know. But it took me years to find out that she was 25 years sober at the time. And my lesson there, I guess, was the fact that you must keep your story fresh for the newcomer, right, you know? And so anyway, what happened is I got went to meetings and stayed straight for, I don't know, a month or so. I started to feel better, you know. And I went up north and had a rainy, rainy day and someone asked me a drink, you know, because I'm wet, and I drank it. And it took me, you know, I was going to tell you, if you're thinking about going, don't do it. I was just dry a month, and I was in a worse state than it had taken me 25 years to get to. Absolutely, I just wanted out of here. I really, really did. In the month of July of 81, I had my friend Marcel, I don't know even know where he is today, but there was a big five-story bookstore down on McGill Street called Le Palais du Livre, and he bought me the 24-hour Hazelton book for 25 cents. And it was that book I read in July. I mean, I knew I had done wrong by going back out, and I knew I had to come back, but I mean, I was going to have to tell everybody where I was and what I did and all this stuff, you know? So what happened is, January 4th says, have I admitted I'm an alcoholic? Have I any reservations in the back of my mind that one day I'll be able to drink safely? And that was the question that needed to be posed to me and that only I could answer, you know? I mean, there was no safe, sick way here. And I had that moment of clarity, and I said to this higher power who I thought had given me a bad deal in life, you know, I have to give up drinking for the rest of my life. But it was the only higher power I knew, you know. So that's what happened. And through the last drink was August of 1981, and that was only to get some food down. It was probably just maybe a few sips, because the prior 3 or 4 days I had been in a stupor, you know, and I just can't believe that I was in that state, you know, today. But I was, absolutely. And I something I always forget to say was that I never, I always profess that I didn't dabble in drugs or anything like that, but my mother had a green thumb, you know, and for anything and everything, and she kind of passed it on to all of us, you know. So somebody was in my house one time and they were smoking a joint, you know, and they left all these seeds, you know. And I had this thumb all day long in my, where the apartment where I was living, the front floor there, and overlooked the mountain. And I had all these little pot plants growing on my table, you know. So I did. I smoked a bit of it, you know, but it wasn't, it really wasn't what I wanted, you know. Alcohol was my drug of choice. So anyway, I came back, I don't know whatever night it was, the 4th or whatever, and I was welcomed back, you know, with open arms, and that was wonderful. And I thought I was going to have to tell everybody where I was and all this, you know, but it didn't happen that way, and so the rest, you know, is like I said, it's hard to fill it 26 years. I mean, at that point, you have a 41-year-old man who is very, very, very sick, just physically, and after 3 months, I left the job at the Montreal General. I realized that you're out of your element. I really couldn't handle it, you know. And I had to get myself to come to the unemployment office with me. I just couldn't go by myself. That's the state I was in, you know. Anyway, it just, like I said, it just went on from there. I was at Friday Temple for a long time, and those guys there, they were all going to Bordeaux at the meetings. And I guess after a year, they took me along with them, and I was in the prisons for like 10 to 12 years, you know. With Chris Bradshaw at LeClaire for the longest time, and we went to La Maxaw, FTC, Bordeaux. I ran the Sallyann for a long time. I was the last sponsor at Parthenay before it moved down to RDP. So that was pretty much my service, you know, apart from at the group level, you know. But what happened is, through all of that, is that I got better. You know, and the people that I needed were put in my path. I had a sponsor from out west, Saskatchewan, and he was Michael's sponsor too, Michael M, who was a pillar of this group. And when Jerry left to go back home, Michael and I just kind of filled the vacuum, and we became each other's sponsor, which is more friends, you know, than sponsor. But recovery is in steps, It's in telling somebody the truth about yourself and finding a higher power. And I really don't have time because I heard this lady say one time, you know, it's better to be grateful than hateful, right? You know, and hateful meaning resentful or anything negative, eh? You know? And if you, and I put it into practice, you know, I thought for a minute and I realized, like, you know, I was such a mess when I got here. I was just so sick, really, really so sick, you know? It's unbelievable, you know, and higher power will, that's what he did to me anyway. He led me along the path gently, you know, and I heard this Jewish lady speak one time, and she said, my sobriety now is like the 23rd Psalm, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I'll not want, you know. And so what happened was, there's the time when the emotional pain will come, and it's different for everybody. The timing is different for everybody because money was the higher power, and I didn't realize that at the time. Sex had played a very, very big part in my life, and so the two were connected, really. So what happened is I had to go through this poverty trip, and I thank God for people like Michael, you know, really, because you think God's gone, you know, and you can't find a job anywhere, you can't, you know, nothing's happening, you know. And I had a sponsee downtown, his name was Claude, and he was kind of going through the same thing, and he said, I just got on my knees, and I said to higher power, if this is what the way it has to be, then help me to accept it. And I said, well, that sounds good, I'll do it. And I did it. And within a week, I was a sober at the time even, and I was talking to this guy, Tommy Donovan, who's still not sober, I don't think. And I said, Tommy, I just said to the higher power, if I had $200 more, I'd be okay for the month. And Tommy says, oh yeah, I know, like that. Eh? So I'm actually singing at St. Patrick's at the time and playing it somewhat, but mostly singing and getting a few bucks for that, actually. And I'm on my way to the choir and it's April the 1st, and it's probably, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10 years ago now, and I was at the corner of Beaverhall Hill, and it was Plaster of Canada then, and it had rained that day, and a little pocket of water caught in the curb, you know, and I don't know why I looked there, but I did, and I see this kind of a thing floating there, you know, and I thought it was Canadian Tire money, or, you know, they're always passing on coupons for free meals down there. It was a $50 bill, and I picked it up, and there was another one stuck to it, and there was another one underneath it, with another one stuck to it. $200, I mean, I should have asked for $500, you know. What happened, my whole thing was from that. I love you. You just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing fine. Just keep going. And that's what I did. And that's what brought me here tonight. You know, is that we give freely of what we find here. And if you don't, none of the promises will come true, really. You know, because you'll be just home sitting alone eventually. You know, because this. There's a guy, an old guy in Lachine, he called it the greatest love story of the 20th century. And that's exactly it, you know. I was a member of this group for like a long time. I'm still a member of Shantzler. And we did everything there, you know. We catered to the poor at Christmas time and you name it, you know. But it was all in the getting better, eh? And like Cecil says, the elder Cecil, you know. They kept telling him, it'll get better. But I got better, you know. And that's why we come. It took me a few years really to find out how sick I was. You know, but then the people who I needed, like I said, were supplied. When my sponsor was leaving to go back to Saskatchewan, we went for Chinese food, and his fortune cookie says, or mine, I forget which was which, but he says, it said, time will heal all wounds, right? And the other fortune cookie said, sooner said than done. So I thank you for listening, and thanks for being here.